Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show, and I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. And I tell you, we are in a real dogfight here in the city of Benton Harbor. You have to be here to believe it and to understand it. I tell you, the revolution has started. The problem is the people are not fighting it. But we are here today to tell you we had a major development in the state of Michigan that is so tremendous. We've been fighting this same issue for years. And now I'm going to read to you what had happened this week in the state of Michigan. It reads, the Detroit News say, judge let lawsuit challenging Michigan juvenile sentencing proceed. A lawsuit challenging the state sentence of juvenile to life in prison without parole can move forward. A federal judge ruled this afternoon. The ACLU of Michigan said, today ruling by U.S. District Court Judge John O'Mallory allowed a group to show Michigan citizen guidelines that denied children an opportunity for parole is a cruel and unusual punishment and is a violation of the constitutional right. Today's ruling allowed us to prove what many already know. Citizen children to die in prison without giving them an opportunity for parole is inhumane, unfair, unconstitutional, said Deborah LaBella, an attorney for the ACLU of Michigan. By knowing a child's potential for rehabilitation, denying judges and juries any discretion, the state doles out unforgivable sentences that violate basic fairness and human rights principles. This decision is the first step towards correcting this fundamental injustice. In a 13-page decision, O'Mallory allowed one of the appointed, Kenneth Maxey, to continue with the case. He threw out 12 others. In 2007, Maxey was 16 when he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. In his role as a robber, Michigan law required that children as young as 14 are charged with certain felonies to be tried as adults. It is unquestionable unconstitutional to deny children any possibility of parole, said Isaiah Edwards, a staff attorney with the ACLU Criminal Law Reform Project. The United States needs to join the rest of the world and stop the cruel, unusual practice of sending kids to spend the rest of their life in prison without parole. I tell you, we have been working on this case for the last 7 years. We have been fighting to make sure that a child does not spend the rest of his life, especially if he's not a murderer. So what we're going to do now, we're going to listen to a little Martin Luther King, and then we're going to get right into our show. And I tell you, I'm in.
We face the difficulties of today and tomorrow. I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, One day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. Every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, tears of thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show, and I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I'm here to tell you that, look, we have been given a check that has came back marked insufficient funds. This is the time where people need to take a stand. Here in the city of Benton Harbor, Whirlpool and our government have merged. I call it fascism. It's right here in the city of Benton Harbor. The thing is, you never have the evidence to support it. We have the evidence to support fascism right here in the state of Michigan, in the city of Benton Harbor. Anytime you have a Whirlpool, who using the divide and conquering of black people in the community, if you stick with Whirlpool, you can get you a house. You can have a job. You can do things that you want to do. But if you're not with them, they'll make you starve. That's the whole plan. And government has went along with it. But today, what I want to talk about more than anything else today, we got to talk about the hostile takeover of our school system. And I tell you, I just want to read a little bit of this report that I have. I went to the teachers' union last week, and I tell you, it was one of the most interesting things I ever been to. Never before have I ever saw teachers stand up for anything. And in this case, they have decided to stand up. See, here's the thing. Here in the city of Benton Harbor, when they attacked the kitchen workers, they wanted the janitors, they wanted the bus drivers, and they wanted the teachers to stand with them. Neither one of them stood with them. So they got rid of the kitchen workers. Then they went after the janitors. When they went after the janitors wanted the bus drivers and the teachers union to stand with them. Neither one of them stood. So they got rid of the janitors. Then they went after the bus drivers. The bus driver wanted the teachers' union to stand with them. The teachers' union refused to stand with them. So they got rid of the bus driver. Now they are coming for the teachers. They are coming for the teachers, and they have nobody to stand with them. Now they are reaching out to anybody who will stand up. But I tell you, the teachers right now have a bigger problem. Not only is collective bargaining is about to be eliminated, you're about to get an overflow of these charter schools. I'm going to just read a little bit of what they're saying about the charter schools. Charter schools in the United States. Wall Street educational model, a privatization construction scam to destroy the public education. Charter schools in the United States. Wall Street. It says here the educational model. Last month, for-profit investment funds were created for the very first time to finance the construction of charter schools across the United States. Jointly managed by Canyon Capital Realty Advisors, they invested $20 billion in assets. Agus Venture, LLC, owned by the tennis player Andrew Agus, it planned to buy up undervalued urban land and jumpstart the construction of 75 new charter schools. Canyon and Agassiz Charter School Fund announced in the state the fund will provide an investment with current income and capital appreciation by responding to the growing demand for quality charter schools facility in the nation, urban centers, and by capturing the opportunity to arise out of the current dislocation in the real estate market. In other words, it will buy inner city land cheaply, develop it, then sell the facility to the charter operation. The firm expects to raise $300 million in equity and invest up to $750 million. The Canyon Agassiz Fund Initiative, with the recent announcement by the Obama administration that hundreds of thousands of dollars of education reform grants will be made available for assisting to start up a new charter school. New charter schools. Charter schools will be taken over unless we stop them. And on that note, I want to bring in my dear friend, my dear colleague, a young man who I love dearly, a former educator, Ralph Pointer. Ralph Pointer, are you there? Ralph, are you there?
I am here.
Hey, Ralph, how you doing today?
I am doing fine. I'm listening to the program, and as I say, every week I'm learning, but I would like to make one correction.
Okay.
I'm an old man who's been involved in education. My first teaching job was in 1957 in the city of Pittsburgh. But education has been my thing since then. And I know we talked of our history, and I like to tell people my history in that I went to Duquesne University. At first, I lived in Western Pennsylvania. I was born there. 50 miles or 30 miles or 20 miles from Pittsburgh as they improved the highways in the same house. And I went to local high schools, went to Duquesne University, University of Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon, and then I taught school. And while I was teaching school, I went to jail for fighting for community control. We had to fight in the streets because children were not getting educated, and we had to educate them. And I came to recognize after 7-8 years in teaching that as long as our children's education was in the hands of those who had no interest in educating our children, they would never be educated. So in 1963, started an organization. In 1965, we were fighting in the streets. 1969, I went to jail because of this, because we had predicted that until the people are in charge of the education of their children, and understand, we, the African Americans in the United States, are the only people on the planet who allow their children to be educated by others. Mm. Understand that. We are the only ones on the planet. And I'd like to reiterate, don't be surprised when Mr. Obama is going for charter schools. Because the Democratic Party has been in charge or has had the loyalties of the black communities and the Latino communities of the inner city, inner cities ever since there was a party. And they have been part and parcel of the problem, because they never supported our right to control our schools. Our schools were the, what would you say, they were the perks of whatever political party got in charge. And they stole from us. And the terrible thing is, you started off the program with the young men going to jail without a chance of parole. Well, what system was that to have so many of these people of the same color in jail without the opportunity for parole? And why were they in that position? Because they didn't learn to read, write, or count. Because they were not taught to read, write, or count. I know from which I speak. I have been a teacher all of my life, teaching students. And as somebody once said to me when I got out of jail, they had a job for me. It was a non-paying job. Job was not educating children. And they said, you got to get to the streets to educate the parents of children, to make them understand the issue of public education. Public education is all about, because we in our community do not know. And Reverend, I'm going to attack the institution which you are very much a part of, the institution of Christianity. And our preachers and our priests and our religious people never understood the need for our children to be educated. And we are the only ones who accept other people's interpretation of education and not a murmur. And one of the things I heard today from an Episcopalian minister who had just come back from Germany, and they had a conference, and she said, one of the things they did is they went to a small concentration camp. And she says the thing that struck her was that everything was neat. It looked just like any American street. And when she came to church every Sunday or she came into the city, her streets looked like that. And she went by a prison every day. And she said, we're numb to the condition of prisons in America. We have become numb to what horrible things are happening inside, just as the people in Germany were numb to the horrible things that were happening inside of their prisons. And she says it struck her that we, the people who know, must alert and alarm and educate those people who do not understand to the issue of education, to the issue of this prison system. And when the numbers can, you know, like we have more people in prison, black and Latino people in prison, than there were slaves. We've reached a point of no return, and we have to understand what that means. And if there's one thing I want our audience to know, when somebody says privatization, that's not public education. And even if privatization works, and we know privatization has not worked, all that is making the business of education profitable for those who invest in it. What's that got to do with our children's education? Zero, zilch, zip, just like they're making the prisons profitable. What does that have to do with reform, re-education? Zero, zilch, zip. De nada. It has nothing to do with it. It's just another excuse to continue our oppression. We must control our education systems, and any party that is not in support of everyone controlling their education system, and by the way, every party is in support of control of their public education, except for black communities.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Ralph, let me ask you a question, Ralph. What do you think about this tennis star investing his money in these charter schools? Can you imagine? If he's trying to send a message to the black folks?
Well, if we haven't gotten a message now, maybe we're not going to get the message. Mm. Their message is that we do not matter, and now they're giving it to us in our face. They used to put smoke on it. They used to say, well, you know, we're going to have similar to community control. They used to lie to us, and now they stop lying to us, and they're saying, you're not going to get an education like the white communities get. They just put it to it. And they say, but it's going to be just as good. Now, you know what that means. The public schools have failed us because we never controlled them. We had school buildings, but they were not schools. And the private schools, the privatization, and don't want to confuse that, private schools with privatization, because private schools are run by the will of those parents who have the money to spend on the private schools. And they are run with more success than the public schools because of the money. Privatization is money invested by someone else to take more money out. Education is not a part of it. And so let us not be surprised when Mr. Obama is in charge of bringing about privatization, supports privatization, because the Democratic Party never supported community control. And when I say community control, I want to be, that's what white people have. That's what we have in every community around you. You want to know what it is? Step outside of your black community and look and see, you know, wherever your nearest white community is. Go to it and see what their schools look like. They hire and fire everybody in them, the janitors, the bus drivers, because when you buy a loaf of bread, you're paying tax. Part of that is tax money. And they give it back to you in institutions, hospitals, roads, and schools. But every place else, they control that.
Yeah.
But for our community, we do not. And we never felt the need. I remember when I first started teaching in Pittsburgh in 1957, there were three licensed black teachers. And, you know, and the thing was that black people did not want black teachers to teach their children. You had to be some kind of outstanding person for a black community to accept you as a teacher. And this is the way, and I'm saying, now whose fault is that? Now that's our, but this is a picture of the condition of our people's minds. Now remember, after our first struggle in 1965 in New York City, when we put in, we says we're going to control who's in the head of our schools, and we put in the first black principal. Can you imagine in Harlem, Bed-Stuy, all of these inner cities? You couldn't be a principal if you're a person of color. Now, I can't tell you how bad that is, but when we fought them in the street, and they says, what can we do to end the fighting? And I says, first thing we have to do is bring in some bright, not just the run-of-the-mill teachers. We have to bring in bright teachers.
That's right.
And we know the smart, the driving young teachers. And two of the teachers, the young women, that I said, these are the people you must hire because they had been activists, social workers, et cetera, and active in the community, and they had all kind of degrees. That they couldn't be said, their degree came from Tennessee. They had local school degrees, Brooklyn College, the College of the New School, Columbia University. They were all here, and they were bright. Well, when we forced them to hire these young women, the first thing that was told to me by the people who were supporting me, they said, Ralph, if we had known you were going to go that far, we wouldn't have supported you. My question was, how far is that far?
Yeah, and they said, explain that to me.
You brought in.
I know. Hey, Ralph, let me read this card that I got from the charter school here in Benton Harbor.
You got to hear this last question.
Right. Yeah, let me read this to you, then I want you to go into details with it. Hold on, here it said. It said, dear friends, please join us for a fun night out on us. This is a great opportunity to meet our staff, tour our school, and learn about our exciting curriculum, about Benton Harbor Charter School. Tuition free, academic rigorous, small class sizes, caring, loving teachers, safe, secure learning environment, free transportation, And if you send your child to our school, your child will get an individual laptop for every student. Now, I know there's something wrong with that picture. Ralph, you tell me what's wrong with it.
What's wrong with it is this is what the students should have in the public schools. They should
right.
have had this a long time ago.
Right.
And the very thing that they're trying to hold out a carrot, we're going to give you what we should have given you a long time ago, and
mm-hmm.
it's going to help you. Right? That in itself tells you that it's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
No charter school to date in this country has proven successful.
Yeah,
and they
absolutely.
For the same reasons that the public schools fail, because
mm-hmm.
it is not in the interest of the people who control it
absolutely.
To make it a successful.
And remember,
school.
The charter school, they can teach you anything they want. It doesn't
and
matter. They don't have nobody really watching over them to make sure that you learn English and math or science and history. They don't have no real watchdog. They can teach whatever they want. If they want to teach about the Antichrist, they can do it. But
and what they don't want to do is teach. What they do is limit the salaries and the pensions of the teachers. And as you pointed out early, when you tried to get teachers to join the other people's struggles, the bus drivers, the janitors, you know, everyone else, the kitchen help, and the people who joined and supported these unions did so thinking selfishly
mm-hmm.
that the unions would support them. And we tried to tell them, you know, don't join the unions in their strikes against the community. Make the unions join the community like they
right.
do in the other community. But people did not understand that. So now a charter school merely means that they will have a charter to get money from the public school financial pool to start schools that are not public. So what you lose is all of the regulations that were built up over 100 years. Right after the Civil War, the public schools were instituted and during Reconstruction, and with the unions were beginning to fight for public schools. So there's a section, a series of rules and regulations that are built up in the public schools. In charter schools, you don't have those rules. They can
That's
say,
right.
go home to you. We don't like the way you look. Go home. They don't have to teach you. But they get the public money. And then in a charter school, they tell you right off, you have no
mm-hmm.
union rights. And you see, they did it bit by bit by bit. They took the people apart and separated them. And now they're going further because they tell these lies to the parents. Yeah, they can give you a computer. You should have
yeah.
had the computer. They can give you small size. You should have had small sizes. And why didn't they do it before now is because now they're going to rape the schools even further.
And you know, pretty soon, Ralph, there won't be any public school system.
Won't be any public schools.
No, absolutely not.
There will be no such thing as the public domain. And
mm-hmm.
and I was talking to an elderly man, and he says, Ralph, I don't understand what's happening. And he says, I'm free, white, and 21. I'm an American. What are they doing to my schools? And I says, my dear friend, how many millions do you have in the stock market? So he looked at me perplexed. He says, I don't have anything in it. I'm a truck driver. So I says, and you are not an American that matters to them. The only difference between your community and my community is my community has discovered that they are being robbed with public education. You are just now discovering that you are being robbed of a public education. So stop talking that you're an American. We have to make this American system together to react to our communities and our children. And, you know, people are still in shock. This is what's happening. People are still in shock because they don't understand what's happening. Now, let me finish that story. When the parents said, if we knew you were going to go that far, we would not have supported you. How far did I go? The young woman that I brought in to elementary school to educate their children, and they turned out to be the best that these parents had ever seen. They were black and they wore afros. And so the parents had been so brainwashed that they assumed that young women with afros somehow just weren't as smart as those young white women who had straight hair. I'm saying, it's something that has been done to us. Now, I don't believe there is any community on the planet today that still believes that. We overcame that. But now we have to overcome the idea that we cannot educate our own children.
And
that we must.
And we, you know what, we have parents, black parents. We used to, didn't want, like you said before, we didn't want black teachers teaching our children.
Exactly.
Yeah, and we didn't want it. I mean, we did everything we could to fight against that. Because they even brainwashed. You, well, I know they brainwashed me. I can't speak for you, but they brainwashed even me to think that a white teacher was smarter than a black teacher.
Well, one of the things, I didn't understand what education was all about, and I always say, you know, I went to all of those universities, got all those degrees, but when I walked to Rikers Island and walked to the lunchroom where there were 500 people and 470 of them were black and brown, man, that was an education. Then I got educated. I was trained. Up to that point, when I saw that, it was, oh, this is what the system is about. It's not about what they had been teaching, what we had learned in the books. It's about control of our people. And this was 1959.
Wow.
And I came out of there, and the first thing they did was put me in isolation.
Mm.
And I was puzzled. And I'm saying, are they doing this for my own safety? But I was in there for so-called assaults on police. They weren't afraid that I could take care of myself. And I'm saying, you know, they got murders, rapers, robbers. Is this for my own safety? Well, no. They said, this is a guy who fights police. And I realized they didn't want me to educate the guys in jail.
Absolutely.
2 months before they let me into population. So the moment I got in population, I started organizing. 2 months later, we shut Rikers Island down. We started the Inmate Improvement Council, 1969. This is where you hear it all over the country. Because of recidivism, 1969, and we shut it down, and we won. Because we understood the dynamic of what was going on. And when the guys in there heard me speak, and they says, man, listen to what this guy come here because of something we did. We came here. That was the excuse they used. But we were chartered for this the day we were born. They had the system all worked out. We weren't going to learn anything. We would have one opportunity. That was drugs and something negative. And when we took that, they put us in jail. There's no war on drugs. There's a war on us. Look around.
That's right. You are absolutely correct. And I tell you, that's a tremendous story, Ralph. And people need to know about that. Those are things that people need to know, because any time that you can spread the word, and when you start educating people on that level, it changes the whole flavor of the situation. Here's something that we need to start talking about. We need to start talking about the revolution itself, because the revolution has already started. We're not fighting it. That's the thing. We're not doing any fighting. They're doing all the fighting. Anytime you have government, And these corporations merging, and they're taking over everything. That's fascism right here in this country. And here I can really speak about it because it's happening right here in my community. And now the school system is getting about to get a dose of fascism that they never thought that would happen. Because these corporations, and government once again. Because it says right here that Obama, $1 billion. $350,000 has already been dedicated to the state of Michigan for charter schools. That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Now remember,
you can get that money to the regular public school system.
Exactly. Now remember who Obama is. His district was out there in Chicago.
Right.
His congressional district, and Arnie Duncan destroyed the Chicago public school system.
That's what
he was going to do.
So
we were all fooled, you know, hope and change. And it's false hope and short change. He did it to us. And we, and as I say, and I listen to the program with your opening, and I listen to Martin Luther King, and we say we love King, and I'm saying the one thing he said that I like, it sticks with me: judge a man not by the color of his skin, but the content of. And when Obama came along with the color of his skin, we all cheered. 95% of black women, 93% of black men voted for this man. And they said they ignored what Martin Luther King told us. We just were so happy that they blocked. Wait a minute. That's the color of his skin you're talking about? Because nobody bothered to, let me not say, very few of us bothered to look to see at the man's history. And
that's
when we saw the man's history, we screamed. And I can tell you, and I tell this story over and over again, I've been working with black people over the years, and we had a program. We lost an election in Harlem, and a woman stood up. We celebrated this woman because she had worked so hard. And when we gave her the flowers, she made a short speech, and she says, "I want to say something." And she says, 2 years ago, I hated this man. And she pointed to me. And she says, "And a year ago, I didn't like him." And she said, "Tonight I'm going to apologize. I hated him because he talked against Obama. And I didn't like him because he continued to talk against Obama." And she says, "Tonight I apologize." Because we should have all been paying attention. He was talking against Obama. And who supported him? Archer Daniels Midland. Out there in the Detroit area, Chicago area, you know the name. Big corporation. Big business. They supported him, and I'm saying, well, if he's on their side, he surely ain't on my side. And I said, I don't know about you, but I'm a poor guy. I worked all my life, the steel mills, the coal mines, tried to have a little something, tried to get the kids through school, tried to do these things that we had to do. But, you know, there's nothing extra. I'm still struggling along. And managed to get through school working 24/7, two jobs, and they managed to get through. But I tell them, it's not about you. If you don't organize your community, your little degrees don't mean nothing.
Absolutely.
Your community, they can take your job. And one of the things that the teachers are now learning, if you don't stick with the community and have a community of interest, they will take your job.
Absolutely.
And the color of your skin will not matter so much. You have to be rich and white.
And one of the things that we have to understand is they're saying, if you do not forsake your community for government and these corporations, they will make you pay. They will starve you out if you let them. And I use the word "if you let them" because that's what they're doing now. They're targeting people like never before. And here we are. We're talking about charter schools, the education system, and what the education system, what happened to it is really criminal. But the point is, the people is still the people. We have failed our own community by now standing up. We cannot sit here and wait until something happens, and then we decide that we're going to stand up and fight. You can't do that. I mean, that's the wrong way. Here's another thing that's going on in the community. It says 365,000 children to lose child care. What they want now, not only do they want to take away, they want to take 12,600 people here in the state of Michigan off of the welfare roll every single month. Also, this means that 365,000 children to lose child care. That means now you are going to have to pay for child care even if you're making minimum wages. And how will the people be able to survive? The charter school system, along with this, when will the people realize that this is a major attack on them?
Maybe this was your education. Maybe the teachers, by inviting you, shows that they know they need help. And they know they must have figured out that their union sold them out, because the first group to is to serve, to endorse Obama for the next election in 2 years.
Right.
It's the teachers' organization.
Is the teachers' organization. You said it all.
The teachers
are what? And they act like they don't know nothing about Artie Duncan. He's from Chicago.
Right, right. And so the teachers are beginning to wake up a little bit, but here their union wasn't afraid to say, I don't care what Obama has done. We're supporting him right now. First group to organization to support, national organization to support Obama. Of course, we know the corporations have been supporting him, you know, like 6 years ago. He built 10 years ago, they built him up. And our first clue was that he didn't know anything about sociology. They say he was an honor student at Harvard University, and one of his first speeches was, the black man is not taking care of his responsibility of the children. And I say, he should have failed sociology because rights and responsibilities go hand in hand. You can't talk about one without the other. There he was talking about one without the other, and they said he made an A. Well, then that tells me they just gave him an A because I didn't hear him talk about rights when somebody raised the question of rights.
Absolutely. You know what, Rap, you are 100% correct. But listen,
you
got about 2 minutes. Why don't you give us an update on Lynn?
Well, Lynn is being Lynn. And one of the wonderful things about her is that she can't stop. She's in jail. And what is she doing? She's taking the most egregious cases of young people in jail. She says there's a woman who's been in jail, like just like the case you were talking about, Pat Clark. She's 39 years old, and she's had more years in jail than she's had out of it. Went to jail at 17, life without parole. Lynn is fighting that case. Pat Clark is her name. And when she was fighting, she started to read that she doesn't want to ever get people involved on a humbug. So she says, I couldn't believe this young woman's story. So she said, give me your papers, your legal papers. I'm going to go over them and see if all that you told me is the truth. So, but that's against the prison regulations. So they censored her. And they said, hey, you're going to do that? We're going to hurt you. And she was so, you know, in such despair when she tried to organize people, and she wasn't able to. Well, when they announced that they were going to censure her, the inmates came together. And so much so that the people, the authorities, couldn't walk the hallways because there would be catcalls and things said behind their back. Fraud, liar, hypocrite. You tell us we must improve our lives, and then for the first time somebody comes in to help us, and what do? Censor them. And then they boycotted the religious services. It says, where are you people talking about changing our lives? You're censoring somebody who's doing something for us.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to come to Lynn and say, Lynn, call her off. And she says, I didn't call anything on. They says, you know, we're not going to censor you, but we have to make pretend because the authorities say we have to do that. Don't say
That's
anything.
Right.
We're not going to do it. And so they didn't. They told her she couldn't have email for 2 weeks and she couldn't have stamps because, you know, she writes letters to everybody. And that's why I say, please write to Lynn Stewart. Because if you write to her, she will return your she will return your message. And it's one of those things that I say, please write to Lynn Stewart with your problem, not her problem.
That's right.
She was one of the greatest lawyers out here. She will write back to you. And so look up first of all.
You still there, Ralph?
LynnStewart.org. We have a website, you know, Lynn Stewart. But other than that, it's a Federal Medical Center, Carswell, 93504-054, Unit 2N, P.O. Box 27137, Fort Worth, Texas, 76127. Get those letters because she says she loves to hear from people on the outside. She loves to relate and to talk to people, you know, and she will write your letter. She doesn't have a form letter that she stamps her name on the bottom. She listens to your story and she writes it. And she writes answers.
That's beautiful, Ralph. Ralph, I'll give you a few more minutes at the end of the show, and then you can do it, but let me bring on Mary.
Go ahead, man.
Mary, are you there?
I am here. How are you, Reverend Pinckney?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Ralph and radio audience? This is Mary Neal. This is Mary Neal. I'm the founder and director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. I came up on an article last week, and it's very censored. It is called Black's Economic Gains Lost During Downturn.
Mm.
So you need to read that article and see that the economic gains that blacks have made over the last couple of decades were basically lost during this economic downturn. And that article, for some reason, is very censored. I tweeted it, and it disappeared.
Mm.
Are you there?
Yeah, we here. Go right ahead.
Yes. Also, America is in the midst of a corporate takeover, a hostile takeover.
That's
by
it.
Corporations. That's the main point. The point is that we are not being invaded by a foreign country. You know, I know they say that we have terrorists, and maybe we do, but basically there is a corporate takeover, hostile takeover from corporations, international corporations, including American and foreign corporations. And what's happening is the prison industry is itself an industry, it's a corporate entity. And right now they have about 2.3 million people in prison. 1.25 million of them are mentally ill, and that's who I advocate for primarily. However, they intend to expand very much over the next few years. They have laws that the private prison industry has helped them write to get Mexicans in prison, that is Hispanics who came here or undocumented workers. They
mm-hmm.
don't intend to send them back to Mexico anymore. They intend to put them in prison. And what they're doing with all of this, and you can look it up online, in Arizona, they have just now made arrangements to go ahead and replace unionized workers with prisoners. See, the whole thing is they're paying minimum wage. They're tired
yes.
of paying union scale. They're tired of our vacation pay and sick leave and worker safety laws. So the war is to use prison slaves. And so black people, brown people, of course, we have a priority, but they really don't care who they use as long as they have free laborers. And for big Fortune 500 companies, as well as the local federal governments, are using these new slaves to replace American workers. 1 million people get up every day behind bars and go to work.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go right ahead.
Now, because I advocate against this, and because I also exposed the secret arrest and murder of my brother, who was a mentally ill heart patient, I am greatly cyber-stalked and stalked in person. I report these crimes to the police. I made a police report with the IP addresses of the computers from which my computer is constantly attacked and destroyed. I have about 8 computers in the last 2 years. The police said that people attacking, that's the police in DeKalb County, Georgia, Detective Miller told me 2 weeks ago that it's not illegal for stalkers to hack into my computer, take my data, use my computer to get in my documents online, remove them offline, and destroy my computer. She said none of that is illegal. Now, the thing is that we have Telecommunications Act of 2000. We have the Internet Protection Act of, I'm sorry, the Telecommunications Act of 1996, the Internet Protection Act of 2000, and then every state, all 50 states have laws, local laws, state laws against hacking. But
mm-hmm.
it's not illegal, she said, to destroy my computers. It's not illegal. And she wouldn't even accept the IP address.
Well, you should tell her that. I said that's not true. If she hacked into your computer, That's like stealing. It's just like the guy, the husband, went into his wife's computer and they found him guilty of yes. So that's
now,
what I think.
Hey,
Mary, you got about a minute. Can you give us something in a minute? And I got to bring on Libby.
All right then, sir. I just want to let you know that what's going on in Benton Harbor, as you say, is only a test case to see if people will rise up against it, because they didn't rise up when my family has been basically imprisoned in my own home. And so they're seeing whether or not people will have sense enough to know what's going on in Benton Harbor is what's planned for their town. We have to realize that Martin Luther King was right. He said an injustice anywhere is an affront to justice everywhere. Look online for Mary Neal COINTELPRO. That's who my problem is, Mary Neal COINTELPRO.
Very good, Mary. God bless you. Go ahead, Libby.
Okay. Speaking of corporations, this is a Whirlpool report. And the first thing about it, Whirlpool, is that Whirlpool Corporation announced plans on Friday to lay off about 315 workers at its refrigerator plant in Amana, Iowa. Now, why did they do this? This is the reason they give, the slow economy. But, you know, my feeling is those jobs are probably going to go to Mexico. Now, here's a second article, and all this can be found on bhbanco.org. That's BH as in Benton Harbor, BANCO.org. The next thing we find out is that in Amana, Iowa, well, and actually the Des Moines Register is reporting this, so the Iowa state and county government gave millions of dollars to Whirlpool, the corporation that never stops taking. Last year, the Iowa Department of Economic Development approved a $6.5 million forgivable loan to Whirlpool. Iowa County also granted the corporation $1.5 million. The money was expected to be invested in upgrading equipment, improving production processes, and making the plant more energy efficient, so they say. And then the last thing is an article that's been written for bhbanco.org entitled, Whirlpool has destroyed the city of Benton Harbor by buying black people and bringing in emergency financial manager Joseph Harris. When we look in the mirror, we sometimes fail to see our flaws and strengths. Whirlpool has blinded residents by dividing and conquering. The corporation uses the Boys and Girls Club, Band of Brethren, First Chance Inc., and the Consortium for Community Development to make it appear as if the black community supports the Harbor Shores Project and Whirlpool's takeover of Benton Harbor. It's devastating what money can do. Whirlpool also controls the Benton Harbor School Board and every sizable school board in Berrien County. Whirlpool Corporation is one of the first to outsource jobs to countries with weak or non-existent labor and environmental standards, which in some cases have child workers. Congressman Fred Upton, heir to Whirlpool, voted for NAFTA. What is most important about outsourcing is it permanently eliminates jobs, destroying communities in the process. Thanks to Whirlpool and Congressman Fred Upton, Benton Harbor is now under a dictator. They would like us to believe that checks and balances in government are not important for us. Benton Harbor doesn't matter enough for that. We don't need checks and balances, multiple governing branches to ensure that a single force doesn't dominate. All Benton Harbor needs is emergency manager Joseph Harris to make every single decision for us. That is the message inherent in the EFM legislation proposed by State Rep. Al Pachulka and Governor Rick the Rictator Snyder, and given speedy approval by the state legislature. We must say no to Pachulka and Snyder. We must say no to Whirlpool. We must say no to Harbor Shores. We must say no to the PGA. We must say no to the hostile takeover of Benton Harbor. And then two brief announcements. Cynthia McKinney speaks in Benton Harbor on October 8th. And next May is a mass demonstration, May 22nd through the 27th. That's 5 days in Benton Harbor. Maybe you have more information on those things, Reverend Pinckney.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But we only got 5 minutes left. Libby, is there anything else you want to say? Because then I got to go to Ralph, and I got to let Mary and them have the last few minutes. Well, what? Tell me something that you want to say. Anything?
Well, I think I pretty much said it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, this is off of the website bhbanco.org, which has all kinds of information about Benton Harbor, Berrien County, and Michigan, and it's worth a read.
Very good, very good. Okay, Ralph, go right ahead.
Yes, well, in keeping with your idea of telling people, giving them information that will help them, and I remember early on when you were talking about what is happening in Benton Harbor will happen in your community, that was a warning to people. So I'm trying to, what can I say to people that will improve their lives? What can I talk about? Knowledge of tomorrow. Prediction. Tomorrow is going to be worse than today. Foreclosures are going to continue. People who have homes, the value of your homes are going to continue to depreciate. Be careful to watch the ratio of the amount of your loan to the value of your house, because as the value of your house goes down and there becomes a certain ratio as to the value of the house, of your house and to your loan, you could lose your home even though you're making your payments on time. Unemployment will continue. Education will continue to be downgraded because they have a thing which they call the new normal. And the new normal is it will never get back to the way it was. We must begin to plan our lives based on the reality that things are not, the economic picture is not going to improve, it's going to get worse. So with that in mind, people can adjust their spending and living styles based on that. And if somebody says, I cut back, Ralph, because you had said this, because Reverend Pinckney had predicted this, then they can say, hey, let me listen to what these people are saying, because what they're saying enables us to change our lives accordingly, to know what's coming down the pike. Understand that. And the only jobs that are going to be available to us are going to be in the military.
Mm.
And this is what they have planned. We are going to become the cannon fodder for this imperial empire they want to spread around the world.
And that's what they're doing. And, Rap, on that note, I got to bring on Mary. Mary, go right ahead.
Thank you, Reverend. Three things. Please remember to look online for Boycott for Justice. That is no shopping on the 9th of any month. The reason we're going to do this is not to shut down Wall Street. One day a month won't do that. But it is to show unity. We still have consumer power. Let's use our consumer power as a protest for everyone on the 9th of each month. Don't shop. Let's show that we have power. Number two, remember that what's done to one will be done to all. Right now, Banco is just a test case right there in Michigan. It's only a test case. If it works, they will spread it. What happened to my family? They secretly arrested and murdered my brother, will not give us any records, will not tell us what happened, and tell me that tearing up my computers is legal. This is something they're doing to me. Remember, Senate Bill 968 is already before Senate. They intend to do it to you. Tend to censor you, keep you from opening links that you want to open, keep you from browsing where you want to browse, keep you from putting all to put online. Right now, we're online on the Reverend Pinckney Show because we have internet. Once they cut internet access what they want online under Senate Bill 968, we still be online. Everybody, please look for Senate Bill 968 and write your congressman, write your senator, and tell them that you demand speech in America. Thank you.
That's beautiful. And on that note, let me say this. The revolution has already started, but the people are not fighting it. You got the corporations, you got government fighting against the people. Believe me, they're winning because we're not fighting. We won't fight until they think it affects us directly. Just like I told you about the teachers. The teachers refuse to stand up for the kitchen workers. They refuse to do it. Now they're under attack. Who's going to be next? This is an opportunity. And Ralph, you're right. I'm warning the people. I'm giving you a warning of what is about to happen. And that don't mean that doesn't matter how much education you have. It does not make a difference because they're coming. Government and these corporations, they're planning to wipe you out. There are Walmarts in every community. You got Whirlpool selling appliances everywhere. And anytime you go out here and side with these corporations, your term is coming. So I'm warning the people, especially black folks, who go out here and get money from Whirlpool and thinking that everything's going to be all right, their time is coming. We have a whole history here in Benton Harbor, which is one of the main problems, how they divide the people up with money. The attack, they got this group called the Band of Brethren, the consortiums of the community. These are black people who have given money to. And these ministers, the ones that have been giving money, that's been taking money, that have been taking money from Whirlpool, their day is going to come. And I'm telling you this, so get ready. Get ready to stand up for your rights in this community. And on that note, we have just ran out of time. And I tell you, I'm excited now. They really got me excited, Ralph. I'm ready to go now. I'm ready to stand up and tell these corporations and government that go jump in the lake or something. You know, just go. You know, cause we got to get these folks ready to move to a different level.
Yes, and when we predict and tell them what's happening, then when it does happen, only then will they recognize that we are the leadership.
We must resist oppression. We must resist oppression.
We must stand together. If we don't do that,
we should resist the devil and he will flee from us.
Yes, he will.
Resist, the devil will flee from us.
He will. That's it. Hey, on that note, I got to say goodnight. Everybody.
Good night.
Have a good week, and don't forget, Cynthia McKinney, October 8th, be here. Talk to you later.